Now let's continue on with Babylon the Great. Let's pick it up here in verse 6 again. And I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints. So that shows down through history that this system has been working. And with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And after seeing her, I wondered with great amazement. Now think of this. Here's John seeing this vision of what the world is going to be like 1900 years after him. And he was astonished. And the angel said to me, "Why are you amazed? I will tell you the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carries her." So they're together. You have to have religion and you have to have government together, which has the seven heads and ten horns. Now, it says, "The beast that you saw was and is not and is about to come up out of the abyss and go into perdition." What are we seeing with these things taking place? Where does it come from? Satan the devil, out of the abyss. So Satan is bringing this whole system out. "And those who dwell on the earth, whose names are not written in the book of life from the foundation of the earth," the book of life has been there from the foundation of the earth, "to write the names in of those who are worthy." So the whole world will be astonished when they see the beast that was and is not and yet is. Now that's quite a thing. Now, here's a mind that has wisdom. "The seven heads and seven mountains on which you sit, these are the seven kings. Five are fallen, one is, the other is not yet come. And when he has come, it is ordained that he remain a little while. And the beast that was and is not, he is the eighth and is from the seventh and goes into perdition." And everything that you see going on goes right to that same thing. Look at all of the government buildings in the world. Nearly all of them, especially in the Western world, are patterned after what? Rome. Did you know that in the Congress of the United States, the emblem of Mussolini's Italy is there? It's a round shaft like this with an axe on the head of it. That's right up front where the speaker sits. Everything that we have here, the roots go back to Rome, even though it started out Protestant. I mean, look at the Supreme Court. Now, it is true that Catholics in America are different than Catholics in other countries. But how many are Catholic? I think about six of them. And what is being brought in? You must sacrifice some of your freedom for the greater good of the society, right? That is Roman law. So let's see with some of these cases coming up what they do. And by the way, with this, you know, give out money for charitable institutions during this pandemic time, 12,000 Catholic institutions received money. We'll leave it at that. Let's go on. Okay, let's come down here to verse 11. "And the beast that was and is not is also the eighth and shall be of the seventh." We read that going to perdition. "And the ten horns which you saw are ten kings who have not yet received a kingdom, and but shall receive authority as kings for 1 hour with the beast." Now, 1 hour is a very short time. Now, how is that going to come out? How is that going to be? Well, that's for another sermon. But it's basically this. And I think that the world government is coming about in a much different way than we have supposed. We have supposed that because they've been building the world order the way have they been doing, that it will be all set and everything will be in place. Well, there's one man, Donald Trump, which is tearing it all down. And he's doing a pretty good job of that. So how will this come about? I think it'll come about this way. When the beast power comes on the scene, and he is so great, and the world will come after him, because Satan's going to make them come after him, that's when the world government will come into the fore. And that's when all of these other religions will be with the Pope. In Rome, right here, I won't read it, but I'll just tell you about it. The Mormon Church has built a great 5,000-square-foot temple in Rome. Most people don't know it, but there's a Hindu temple, there's a Buddhist temple, there's an Imam temple or Islam, and there is a Chrislam temple, all in Rome. Sound a little like daughters coming home? Yes, indeed. Verse 13, these all have one mind, or that is, one purpose. Who's going to make them think that way? God is going to let Satan take care of that for him. And shall give up their power and authority to the beast. These shall make war with the Lamb, but the Lamb shall overcome them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and those who are with him are called and chosen and faithful. That's when we come back to the earth to take over the earth. Okay, so this goes clear to the end time. 2 Corinthians 11. Now, it's interesting. How many have memorized the verse 2 Corinthians 4:4? What does that say? That Satan is the god of this world who has blinded the minds of those who don't receive the gospel. Right? The god of this world, this age. Okay? Now, let's read chapter 11. Verse 1, I would that you might bear with me in a little nonsense, but indeed do bear with me. I'm jealous over you with the jealousy of God, because I've espoused you to one husband so that I may present you as a chaste virgin to Christ. But I fear lest by any means, as the serpent deceived Eve by his craftiness. And how does that craftiness work? He covers the sin with that which looks good. That's how he always does it. So that your minds might be corrupted from the simplicity that is in Christ. For indeed, now we've seen this happen, if someone comes preaching another Jesus, now that's any version of Jesus that's different from what the Bible teaches, whom we did not preach, or you receive a different spirit which you did not receive, what's moving the Lutherans to worship a mother God? A spirit. And that's real. And they feel it. When they do it, they feel good. See, because there's the good side of Satan to lead people into abominations and deeper sin. A different spirit which you did not receive, or a different gospel which you did not accept. Isn't that a different gospel that this new Danish Bible is? Yep. The homosexual Bible? Yep. The neuter gender Bible? Yep. Now, we've got this wonderful booklet by Joseph Ackerman, which compares 27 modern translations with the faithful version and the King James, showing what they've taken away, showing what they have added. Now, if you go buy a new Bible today, you don't know how it's been translated. But Satan has his people into translating committees. And who are those? The Catholics, the homosexuals, the lesbians, they're all there. That's why the Bible's coming out the way that it is today. Let's go on. Or a different gospel which you did not accept, you put up with it as something good. They never come in and tell you, I'm going to lead you away from God, and I'm following Satan, the devil, and we're all ending up in the lake of fire. How many followers do you think they would get with that? Nobody. No. They come and say, well, look at this modern age. We need to understand this. Now, verse 13. For such are false apostles, deceitful workers, who are transforming themselves into apostles of Christ. Doesn't the Pope say he is the final word of everything Christian in the world? Yes. And no marvel, for Satan himself transforms himself into an angel of light. And that's why they don't comprehend what's coming on. Because the light that Satan has is the light of darkness. Now, what did Christ say about the light? He said, the eye is the light of the body. And if your eye be filled with light, great is the lightness. But if the light that be in you is darkness, so he compares it. If you have that, you're not going to follow the truth. Now let's come to Galatians 4. Galatians 4. Now, as we get into this and read this, let's understand. The new covenant, I'll just summarize it this way. The new covenant is through the sacrifice of Jesus Christ, his shed blood and his sacrifice. He was raised from the dead, the right hand of God. Our part is repentance, and our sacrifice is baptism. And we're joined to the death of Christ. So we both have a death covenant. And his was for the sin of the world, and ours was for our own sin and to get rid of the old self. But since we need to grow in grace and knowledge, we come out of the watery grave and we walk in newness of life by loving God and keeping his commandments. Okay? And our relationship with God is spiritually direct. There's no man in between. The only one who is in between is Christ. No man, no minister, no evangelist, no pope, no cardinal, no imam, nothing. See? Now, all the other religions of the world have men between them and God, and who fills in that space. Satan and the demons. Okay, so this is why this is such a fantastic thing with the new covenant. And this is why Satan likes to come in to pervert it. So chapter 4 and verse 1. Now then, I say, for as long a time as the heir is a child, he is no different from the servant, although he is Lord of all. Now he's comparing our lives before we're converted to a child. And now we become the begotten children of God. But before that, he's under guardians and stewards until the time appointed beforehand by the Father. In the same way, when we were children, we were held in bondage under the elements of the world. We lived the way the world lived. Now, we didn't know the elements of bondage that was there, did we? No, until we got involved in it. But when the time for the fulfillment came, God sent forth his own son, born of a woman, born under law. Now, he had to be subject to under law because he could not sin. Now, I'm going to, a little sidebar, but I'm going to do a sermon. What did Mary know? We don't know how much she knew, But I was reading in the Greek here just a couple of days ago, John, the second chapter with the wedding at Cana. And they ran out of wine, and she came to Jesus and said, "They've run out of wine." What did Jesus say to her? "My hour, my time has not yet come." Now, why did he say that to her? Makes you wonder, how much did Mary really know? I don't know, but she must have known something for him to say that, right? So what did he do? He said, "No, we're all teetotalers in the New Testament. We got all this water you're going to drink." No, he turned it into wine. All right, under law. "In order that he might redeem those who are under law." So, if under law means commandment keeping, how are you redeemed from commandment keeping? It can't be. Under law means you're in the world subject to all the laws of God all the time. And you're a sinner. So Christ had to come under law and never sin. Now, you understand how great a job that was. So that we might receive the gift of sonship. Now, the Protestants only have the first step, forgiveness of sin. But it's never forgiven because they don't baptize anymore. And they say, once you say this little prayer, you're saved forever. Therefore, all those who do that, there can't be anyone who falls away. But that isn't true because the Bible talks about those who fall away, right? Sonship, that direct contact with God. More than that, we receive the Spirit of God the Father and Jesus Christ. Now hold your place here and let's come to John 14. Now we've covered this many times before, but it is worth repeating very often for us to really grasp the whole point of the new covenant and the Spirit of God and God in us and Christ in us so that we maintain that relationship with God. John 14, verse 21. "The one who has my commandments and is keeping them." Now notice it is the one. God is working on an individual level with each one of us. And he's the only one who has the power to do that. That's a fantastic thing. Okay. "That is the one who loves me." Now, reverse it. "And the one who loves me shall be loved by my Father, and I will love him and manifest myself to him." Now, Judas, who wasn't Iscariot, didn't know how that was going to happen, so he says, "How's that going to happen?" It's going to happen by the circumstances in your life and by you coming to God and really knowing you need God. And then you come to baptism after that. When that happens, God manifests himself to you by letting you know you're a dirty, rotten sinner and you need God. Which before, you didn't think so. You were good. I'm cool. Whatever it may be. So he asked him, what's going to happen? You're going to manifest yourself to us and not to the world. Here's how it's done. It's a spiritual interaction. Jesus answered and said to him, "If anyone loves me, he will keep my word." And that's the whole message of Christ. "And my Father will love him, and we will come to him and make our abode with him." Now, the new covenant is different from the old covenant in that they did not have the Spirit of God within them. And not only do we have the Spirit of God, we have the two factors of the Spirit of God, the begettal from God the Father to be his future sons and daughters, and the Spirit of Christ to develop the mind of Christ. And those two work together. And what did Jesus say about the Father and him? He said, we are one. So that is a special relationship with God. Only those who have the Spirit of God can have that relationship with him. So that is the great thing that it's talking about there. Now notice what he says here, verse 24. The one who does not love me does not keep my words. And the word that you hear is not mine, but the Father's who sent me. So isn't that something? All of these teachers coming along and saying, well, we'll do this and that's fine. Oh, let's all get together and do these things together. Oh, that's a wonderful thing. All people need to be of one spiritual mind. You can be in different churches, but we all accept each other. That's not the way. See, God's way is entirely different. Now let's see that in Romans 8. In order for us to receive the sonship, Paul brings it out here. Romans the 8th chapter. Verse 8, Romans 8 and verse 8. But those who are in the flesh cannot please God. That is someone who does not have the Spirit of God. Yeah, however, you are not in the flesh. Now think of this, even though you're still living in the fleshly body, how is God looking at us? If we're faithful in loving him, he's looking at us as what he's going to make us at the resurrection. Now that's quite a thing, see. You're not in the flesh, but in the Spirit, if the Spirit of God is indeed dwelling within you. Now notice the complete parallel with what Christ said in John 14. But if anyone does not have the Spirit of Christ, that's part of the Spirit, Jesus said, we will come and make our abode with you, or our dwelling place. Okay, so the Spirit of Christ, he does not belong to him. But if the Spirit of Christ be within you, the body is indeed dead because of sin. However, but the Spirit is life because of righteousness. God's Spirit leads us to do the things we need to do. Now, if the Spirit of him who raised Jesus from the dead is dwelling within you, that second part of the Spirit that raised Jesus from the dead, what is that? The Spirit of the Father, right? So the Holy Spirit consists of from the Father and of the Son. Here it is talking about it again. But if the Spirit of him who raised Jesus from the dead is dwelling within you, he who raised Christ from the dead will also quicken or make alive spiritually your mortal bodies, because of his Spirit which dwells within you. Now, that is the Spirit of sonship. Now come down here to verse 14. For as many as are led by the Spirit of God, these are the sons of God. All right? Reverse it. As many as are not led by the Spirit of God are not the sons of God. See? No one can do a nice little prayer like they do on Protestantville and think that they're really converted. Now, they may have a good feeling in their heart. They may be doing some things that are right. They may make some changes to their lives, but they don't keep the commandments of God, starting with what is the main one to start with? Sabbath. Right. As many as are led by the Spirit of God, these are the sons of God. Now we have not received a spirit of bondage again to fear, but you have received the Spirit of sonship, whereby we call out, Abba, Father. Okay? The Spirit of sonship. Now, let's come back to 1 John the 3rd chapter. Let's see something on that. Now, there are two words for son. Huios, which can mean either male or female. And the other one is techna. Now, techna means your own begotten children. Remember the account of Zechariah and Elizabeth? Elizabeth was to be the mother of John the Baptist. Well, in the Greek word, for her being childless, it is a techna. A means without children. So here we have the word techna referring to us. Now let's read it. Verse 1. Behold, what glorious love the Father has given to us. This is the New Testament. This is the new covenant coming from God the Father in Jesus Christ, that we should be called the children of God, the techna, meaning begotten by God. Now, the King James says adoption. Isn't that what the King James says? Yeah, not here, but in Romans 8, it says adoption, right? It's not adoption. Adoption is you take someone who has been begotten by someone else and take them as your own child. But they never have any of your genes or chromosomes. But your techna have genes and chromosomes from mother and father. So what do we have? Techna of God? We have our genes and chromosomes that we have, plus the begettal of the Father for sonship. We are, that we should be called the techna of God. For this very reason, the world does not know us because it did not know him. Beloved, now, that means at this time, we are the children of God. The techna. Now, that's different from anything with the testament with Israel. So this is what is so important. We have that direct connection with God the Father and Jesus Christ in heaven above that we can call out at any time, Abba, Father, and God will hear us. And God will help us. Beloved, now we are the children of God, and it has not yet been revealed what we shall be, but we know that when he is manifested, we shall be like him because we shall see him exactly as he is. All right. Back to Galatians 4. Now this becomes important because when these false teachers come along and bring things that they say you must do in order to be saved, this is what was happening here. We finish verse 6. Galatians 4 and verse 7. So then you are no longer a servant, but a son. And if a son, you're also an heir of God through Christ. We're joint heirs with Christ. What has he inherited? All things. Joint heirs. Now the reason we're joint heirs, because we'll be in the first resurrection. All of those who are in the second resurrection or even during the millennium will not be joint heirs with Christ. So that's why this is so important. That's why Paul is so strong against these false prophets. Verse 8. Now on the one hand, when you did not know God, I want you to underline that or remember it. When you did not know God, you were in bondage to those things who were not gods by nature, the gods of Babylon the Great, right? And those are all idols, or demons and Satanism. Verse 9. But on the other hand, after having known God, rather, after having been known by God, How is it that you are turning again, that means turning back to, the weak and impotent elements to which you again desire to be in bondage? Now, you put that whole thing together. When they didn't know God, they were in bondage to those things which are not God's by nature. Now it says here, to which you again desire to be in bondage. Now notice, verse 10 becomes very important. Okay, verse 10. You are of your own selves. Now that's the correct translation. Observing days and months and times and years. Now then, Protestants interpret it this way. Paul is telling them you don't have to keep the holy days or the Sabbath. Do the holy days and Sabbath come from those that are not God's? No. What comes from those who are not God's? Sunday keeping, Easter, Christmas, all of the pagan days under different names, different generations throughout history. So you of your own selves, not by command of God, not by command of Paul, are observing days and months and times and years, going back to the pagan beliefs they had before. So he says, verse 11, I am afraid of you, lest somehow I have labored among you in vain. Brethren, I beseech you, be as I am. How was Paul? Loving God, keeping his commandments, keeping his Sabbath, preaching the gospel, all that sort of thing. Be as he. For I also am as you are. You have not wronged me in anything. Now you know that at first I preached the gospel to you in the weakness of the flesh. So he's reminding them, see. Remember what you came out of. Remember when I came to you. And they were going back to the things they were doing before, with one addition, circumcision. Now, we'll cover that next time, because the hardest thing in the world to fathom is Jewish paganism still requiring circumcision. Now that's a strange mixture. Now that's why I've said you need to have scripturalism versus Judaism. Because I explained in great detail there how that in Egypt there were Jews, remember what they say? They are Jews but are not, okay? We have to be a Jew in the heart, that is like Christ, okay? There were Jews who had a temple in Egypt at Leontopolis. Now, the way this sect came about was, after Antiochus Epiphanes had desecrated the temple and offered swine on the altar of God, that the Levites got rid of the high priest because he was a renegade and very pagan and was not following God. His name was Onias II. He was a legal descendant from Aaron, but so corrupted, they didn't want to have him as high priest again. So they took a leading Levite called Hyrcanus. And he exiled Onias II. He went to Egypt. And the king of Egypt welcomed him and gave him an abandoned temple in Leontopolis in Egypt. Now, he knew he couldn't offer animal sacrifices there, but he had what kind of religious service? meal offerings or bread offerings, drink offerings or wine offerings, and incense. Now, where do you see that today? Catholic Church. Because they had a great Jewish pagan, but still requiring circumcision movement there in Egypt in Alexandria. How many have read anything by Philo? Now that'll blow your mind. You start reading that. When I was doing this series, and if you get this series, you listen to it, I do a lot of reading that covers all of that. Now, another little sidebar. Can you think of one man in the book of Acts who was a very great speaker, but he only knew the baptism of John? What was his name? Apollos. Where did he come from? Now, he turned out to be pretty faithful, but we're not told if he remained faithful. That's another subject, okay? And this shows that there were a lot of those coming out of Alexandria into where Paul was preaching and bringing the things listed out here in Galatians. Observing pagan observances, but being circumcised. An amazing mixture. Now then, Protestants have it totally wrong. This is not saying you don't have to keep the Sabbath or holy days. This is saying stop keeping the days that you did before you were converted. See? Just exactly like today. We have churches in Southern California that used to be a worldwide church of God, and they printed out their little thing that Byron Norwood showed me. They have the holy days listed on the front side. On the back side, they have Halloween and Christmas and Easter. They do all of them. So today, we have in Southern California churches just like it was in Galatians. Amazing. Just like what Solomon did, brought in paganism. Just like all the other changes. That's why it's so important for everyone who is in the church of God to have proved and know that you have proved that this is the word of God in truth. And this is what we are to do. Everything else here comes around like a nice little good thing we're going to do, and then a little leaven leavens the whole lump, and voila. Okay? Let's go ahead and end it there and continue next week.